Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo. We bring you hand-selected hosts, podcasts, and talk radio programming with listening options, 24/7 streaming, or listen on demand. We also feature one-on-one segments with important guests, people who have something to say that you need to hear. And if you have something to say and would like to be featured on the network, please visit speakuptalkradio.com for all of the details, or contact us at pr@speakuptalkradio.com. Well, I've really been looking forward to today because I have an award-winning educator who looks at things differently and is bold enough, or maybe crazy enough, to write about what he has seen. He is P.M. Duvono, and I call him Patrick. He is an educator, author, speaker, blogger, teacher, trainer, and published composer slash musician. Patrick earned his MA in education and became a national board certified in adolescent mathematics while teaching at-risk students. He was born and educated in the Midwest, and after college, he moved to Los Angeles to seek his fortune in the music industry and had just enough success to be on dozens of records, to hear himself on the radio when he was broke, and to be very wary of fame. He loves teaching and really cares about his students. He is a pessimist because of his experience with educational reform, a pragmatist because of necessity, and an optimist because of his faith in people. Inspired by 25 years of teaching experience, he wrote the book titled What Happened to David as a gift to his students to tell their story. And you can follow him at his website called teacherfromplanetreality.com. And I think all of us wish we had at least one teacher from Planet Reality, but better late than never. So here he is. Welcome to the network, Patrick.
Thank you very much. It's really a pleasure to be here, Pat.
Thank you. And I love that. Teacher from Planet Reality. How did that come about?
And when I was working on my national boards, I would wind up meeting other teachers. I'm, as near as I can tell, I'm the only teacher who taught at an option school, an alternative school, and got National Board Certified in Mathematics in Los Angeles anyway. Mm-hmm. And most of the other teachers were teaching very advanced projects with their students. They had honors and things like that. I was teaching students how to add and subtract. And we would go to various math conferences and stuff, and I would always sit, even though I taught high school, I would sit in with the middle school teachers. And they kept asking me, why don't you sit in with the high school teachers? I said, because you guys are talking about stuff I'm not teaching. I have very few students who were functioning at, who at least came into my classroom, who were functioning at a high school level. I did have some who were brilliant. And that's another reason for writing the book is not all my students were criminals or screw ups. They just, some of them were just unlucky. But, there were so many things in educational reform where I would say, wait a minute, that's just not right. That's just not what my experience is. And so my blog is really all about my personal experiences. And I say in there, we all have different experiences. So teachers that were teaching all honors would look at some of the things I would say, and they say, you've got to be kidding me. And I'd say, no, that's really what's happening. Mm-hmm. And that's how it came about.
Yeah, well, yes, you were definitely Planet Reality. And I do want to get into your blog later because that is awesome. It's outstanding. But before we
sure,
do, you had an interesting past that led you to teaching that prompted you to write the book, What Happened to David. But before we get into the book and your blog, share if you would the moment, if there was one, when you heard that voice that said, hey, Patrick, you need to write about this.
Boy, I don't know that there really was an actual moment. It was more a growing suspicion. I've tried to get my students interested in Treasure Island, which people don't realize is really a gangster story. And the vocabulary is just beyond them. And I was looking at the books they were reading. I was also looking at the books that were getting stolen from my classroom. And the books they were reading were Monster and My Bloody Life and A Boy Called It and Go Ask Alice and all this really depressing stuff. And I wanted to give them something. None of the books really reflected their life, and so I started writing it just to see if I could.
Yeah.
And I had done all sorts of academic writing, so the actual nuts and bolts of doing the writing was no problem.
Right.
But I wanted to have something for them that told about them, mm-hmm. that they could relate to.
And you say that your book is an allegorical work of fiction. On one level, it is a simple, fast-paced teen young adult love story. On a deeper level, it is a series of philosophies, life lessons, and survival techniques for school and the world outside of school. And finally, it's a stew of hidden and not-so-hidden cultural references, from ancient Greek myths to classical literature, comic books to rhythm and blues, political satire to science fiction, cinema, and beyond. And I really want to talk about all three of those things. So let's begin at the beginning. Yeah, let's begin with the entertaining piece of the book. Let's talk about that.
Well, it's 144 pages. It's very fast-paced. I made my main characters, David and Mary, do not have last names, nor do they have ethnicities described for them. That way, my Japanese kid could identify with it as much as my Hispanic kid, as much as my Black kid. And the kids really did identify with it. And on one level, it's just a real simple teen love story. And there's plenty of violence and action, and also plenty of comedy. That's the easy part. You don't need to understand any of the literary references to get through the story. The literary references just happen to be there for people who identify with it. And the philosophies, I've had kids say to me, well, like one of the philosophies, I can't control what the world does to me. I can only control how I react to it. I had one kid say, boy, I wish I had heard that before I got in trouble. I hadn't really realized that I had that many philosophies in the book. It's the kids who read it that told me different things. Boy, I wish I'd read that before I beat up my uncle.
Oh, my.
I wish I read that before I got in trouble. I wish I'd read that before this or that. And I went, oh, gee, that stuff is in there. Okay, cool.
Mm-hmm. Then at the same time, then you say it's also a resource about bullying and how difficult and complex that issue really is. And I can't tell you how many authors and people that I've been interviewing bring up that topic. So let's just go there for a while.
Well, the thing that makes it so difficult and is the vast majority of books about bullying have a sympathetic but weak main character who's being beat up on all the time. And in my book, everybody is sympathetic, but or the main characters are, but they're tough, and they stand up for themselves, and that's one of the turning points. What happens to David does provide a new twist on school bullying, because it tells what it's like to be victimized and then stand up for yourself and then get in trouble because you stood up for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And it also goes into one of the main concepts of the book is evidence can work for you or evidence can work against you. And what many people don't realize is actually this also relates to one of my blog pieces called Three Things to Know About Bullying Before You Assault Someone at Your Child's School, is that schools have to follow the rule of law. It's not what we think we know. It's what we can prove in court. And so what happened to David is there's a lot of bullying that goes on that they can't prove. They have to wait until there's physical evidence. And that's one of the things that makes it very difficult for this. The school can watch for it, and the school can be there as best we can. But until there's actual evidence, we have to follow rule of law. And that makes it very, very difficult to deal with. And also, it also gets into the idea of bullies usually aren't too bright. Or there's some damage in there that causes them to pick on people for their own aggrandizement, their own ability to control someone else.
Mm-hmm.
There, too, is it's very difficult to get the bullies to change their mind or to see the world differently. And that's explored a bunch of different ways in the book.
And then you say it's a stew of hidden and not so hidden cultural references. Let's just talk about some of those.
Sure. Well, there's in Greek myth, I use the name Prometheus Hernandez for this kid who is actually a gun-toting car thief. And he came to our school out of jail. And he gets attacked by a rival gang member. He almost beats the other gang member to death. So he winds up going to jail for fighting when he was the one who was attacked. As far as classics, David's story of how he gets bullied and sort of convicted of a crime is Richard III. I've got by Shakespeare. There's a bunch of references from that. But you don't have to understand the Richard III story in order to get it. And talking about the stupid car thieves, there's a car theft that happens in the book, and they actually drive to school. And one of the things that they say is they didn't think the police would know the car was stolen because they were driving to school. And one of the guys and one of the car thieves shows up at school the next day, and I called him Bardolfo. That's from Henry V. Bardolph gets caught stealing from a church in Henry V, and he gets hung. But this kid winds up stealing a car, and he gets back into school, and he has the thing where he says, "Well, I'm out on bail. It was only my first felony." And only his first felony? And our comic books, at one point, David's talking with his father, and he says he gets frustrated because his dad's kind of taking the comedic role. And he goes, "Am I adopted?" And his father goes, "Well, we were waiting to tell you. You were left on our doorstep by extraterrestrials. We try to love you as our own, Kal-El." I had one student who knew who Kal-El was. Mm-hmm. And I have David quote Muddy Waters in the one of the climactic fight scenes. And political satire, the counselor that Mary goes to see towards the end of the book, his name is Dr. McVerdick Viva. And that's from the movie Dr. Strangelove, or How I Learned to Love the Bomb. And McVerdick Viva means strange love. McVerdick is strange. And Leva, and Mary said, "I think this guy was a little strange, but I got where he's coming from." Sci-fi, at one point, Mr. Destry breaks up a fight using the words from The Day the Earth Stood Still. Beyond, Mr. Destry comes from, he got his name from the movie Destry Rides Again, which is a movie about violence. All these references, Richard III, Henry V, there's a reference to Hamlet, there's Dr. McVerdick Leva, these are all anti-war sort of themes that mm-hmm. or anti-violence sort of themes that go throughout it. And Mr. Destry is named after Thomas Jefferson Destry in Destry Rides Again, which is a Western starring Jimmy Stewart, in which he plays a sheriff that doesn't carry a gun. And again, it's all about different things that teachers could bring in. For example, there's one point where Miss Curtis tries to break up a fight, and there's and I use the metaphor, this rodeo of the foolish and the fearless hadn't even gone to Regulation 8 seconds. And so I was able to get students to look up what rodeo events only last 8 seconds. There's only three of them. And does that metaphor fit the action in the story? Wow. And the three are bronco busting, bareback bronco busting, and bull riding. And the fact that Miss Curtis jumped on this guy's back while he's beating up this other kid, and he didn't even notice her. She's flopping around on his shoulders like a sweater. And so I asked the kids, who was the fearless and who was the foolish? And Miss Curtis was the fearless, and the foolish was the kid who started the fight.
Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of depths and layers to this story that one may get or one may not. And it sounds like you were just having a good time with yourself.
Absolutely, absolutely. That, there's a point in the book where Mary stops writing. She's supposed to write down all the things that happened, and she's telling this story sort of in flashback. There's one point where Mary says, "I can't do this writing," and I'd sort of given it up. I sort of thought, I don't know, do I really want to do this? And I thought about it and thought about it for a couple of weeks, and I thought, yeah, I really do want to do this. So I finish it. And so Mary continues to write, and all the characters. David is the angel of my better spirit. Mary carries my outrage, and Cosmo carries my anger.
Oh, wow. I love this. You talk about the oasis of second chances. I love that. I love that description. You talk about the land of stupid mistakes. So those are two distinct metaphors about school, which, we can all relate to that.
Well, one of the reasons Mary is the one who comes up with the land of stupid mistakes. Because they're in the office talking to the principal, and Cosmo does a stupid thing, and the principal says, "Look, you guys came here because of a stupid mistake. You don't want to make another one." And that's when Mary goes, "Oh, I'm an exile in the land of stupid mistakes." Mm-hmm. And so she's talking to David, and she says, they're talking about, it's their first day at school, and they're talking about how they feel about it. And she says, she's an exile in the land of stupid mistakes. And he goes, well, that is one way to look at it. And he says, but I prefer to look at it as an oasis of second chance. And for many of our students, we really were an oasis of second chance. Mm-hmm. We were, for many of our students, we were an oasis of last chance.
Yes.
But matter of fact, last Friday, I went to one of my former students, just graduated from Cal State Dominguez Hills. I went to her graduation. So I have students doing hard time, and I have students graduating from college.
Wow. It sounds like you've seen it all, because not only did you teach in the alternative schools, you taught with a softer group of youngsters. I read your most recent blog post about School Broke My Heart.
Yes.
Yes.
That was when I was teaching special ed.
Right, right. So obviously this book could be a valuable teaching tool, and you say that you have lesson plans available, and some teachers have used this with success. Let's talk about that, because I think that there's just so much to this book. It could be used in so many ways.
Well, that's it. First of all, it is a fairly easy read. The hardest word in it is Ziggurat, or Dr. McVerticleba. It was the sort of thing where I had kids reading it. One day I walked up, and this girl was sitting on the front porch, on the steps of my classroom. We were all had bungalows. And she said, they were making out. I said, who was making out? She said, the people in the story. It's a Disney kiss. you know, but they weren't making out. It was a Disney kiss. But that's how the kids saw it. And I was able to get a couple other English teachers to try it. And I came up with a bunch of ideas. Some of them were to list all the philosophies, and the kids would do that. Some of it was short writing things, like I asked one, Angel is the name of my villain in the book, name against type.
Right.
And one of the things Cosmo says is, he talks about school, and he says, schools, every schools are all alike. If your teachers are good and you sit next to people who are sane, it's great. But if your teachers are lazy and crazy, or you sit next to a thug, bully, or sociopath, you've got problems. And every school's got its share of lazy teachers and thugs, bullies, and sociopaths. So one of the lessons was, is Angel a thug? Is he a bully? Is he a sociopath? Or is he all three? Mm. And then I did another lesson where I had students defend Angel. I said, what are the ways that it could be his anger problems and his strangeness are not necessarily his problem? I had kids in that class that didn't know what shaken baby syndrome was. So we went through all these different types of traumatic brain injuries and birth defects that could cause someone to not be all there. And I said, I want you guys to write a letter to a counselor defending Angel. On the one hand, you're talking to a lawyer trying to put him in jail, saying, convincing someone he's a thug, a bully, and a sociopath. And right after that, you write a lesson where you're trying to defend him and say, well, he's actually not responsible for his actions. We went through the metaphor. We taught the kids what a metaphor is and what similes are, because the book just seems to have plenty of them. Mm-hmm. Again, I wasn't trying to put them in there. They just kind of popped out. I had the kids write from their own experience. One of the things was talking about Angel. I said, have you ever known somebody like Angel? One of my Japanese students said, yeah, I got an uncle in the Yakuza. He's 6'3", weighs 300 pounds, got a full body tattoo, and is missing two fingers. And I had to sit with him in the backseat. The first time I met him, I had to sit in the backseat of the car with him. He scared me to death. And another one, I said, have you ever felt threatened? One girl wrote, yeah, these five girls came up on me. And it was unfair because I was in heels. She didn't think it was unfair because it was 5-1. She thought it was unfair because she was in heel.
Wow.
I said, have you ever brought a weapon to school? And one girl said she brought a baseball bat. And all the kids turned around and looked at her and go, baseball bat? Oh, it's one of those small souvenirs ones they give away at the baseball stadium.
Wow.
We were still kind of going, okay.
Yeah, a matter of perception, huh?
Yeah. That's the other thing, too, is Mary comments on all the students who bring weapons to school. And that in itself was a whole lesson we could do about what kind of students bring weapons. Are they really the really tough guys, or are they the people who are getting victimized? And frequently it's the ones who are getting victimized. are the ones who bring weapons. We would do searches, and sometimes we'd find them, sometimes we wouldn't.
As we're talking about using the book as a teaching tool, it just made me think of how special you are as an individual, what you've been through, what you've seen. I'm almost wondering how effective your average teacher could incorporate this into their lesson plan. It just seems like you've got some kind of a special way that you communicate or understand that might make you stand out a little bit more.
Bless your heart for saying it. I'd like to think so, but I also like to think that with the lessons I do have prepared, and the lessons the book teaches are ones that any teacher get. I actually wrote it also for parents. One of the problems that kids run into is you go home and they say they're being bullied, and the parents don't know how to react. And so the parents that I wrote into the book, and believe me, the book is mostly about the kids, but the parents and the adults I have are more archetypes than stereotypes. The ones that are more effective do the right thing. One of the right things is listen. And Mary, even at one point when she's talking about the threat she's up against from Angel, goes and talks to her mom, and she says, her mom, she didn't interrupt me. She just listened. Who are you, and what have you done with my mother? The same thing happens to David. His parents listen. His father makes a few comments that are a little bit funny and strange, but the father is the one who quotes Hamlet, and he says, remember what Polonius told Laertes, and David says, neither a borrower nor a lender be? And his father goes, no, beware of entrance to a quarrel, but upon being in, bear the opposed, beware of thee. And again, it shows how the rule of law is important, but by the same token, it also shows how there's a fight happens in Miss Curtis's room, and Miss Curtis, as I said earlier, jumps on the one guy's back and flopping around like a sweater. Mr. Destry bursts in and drags the guy away. And the thing is, neither one of those teachers was following school protocol or union guidelines. Union guidelines say you don't get involved in a fight. But as I said on my website in one page, I said, what are you supposed to do, stand around while somebody's getting the crap beat out of them?
Right. And you bring up such difficult issues on your blog. I read all of them. It's like a mind-blowing look at issues that really require serious thought and attention. Are you gay? I thought that was a very interesting conversation. Gunfight at the furniture store. Gangsters have cars. It's almost too much and too beyond the realm of comprehension, yet we as a society really have to come up with some solution. So I applaud you for writing about this. But then what happens? How does change really happen?
Well, part of the change is there's a really wonderful book called Collapse by Jared Diamond. And it's how societies choose to succeed or fail. And he says one of the things that causes a society to fail is a refusal to give up cherished beliefs when they're not working for you.
Yes.
One of the blog pieces is Busted for Shouting. And I talk about this girl who was so caustic and that her classmates were saying, man, can't you suspend her? Get her out of here. She's taking away art learning time. And the thing is, the school was under a mandate to not suspend. It was one of our rules that, if somebody whipped out a knife and started stabbing somebody, of course we would suspend them. They'd be expelled. But just being difficult, just being argumentative, just being disruptive was generally considered not a reason to suspend. And the cherished belief goes, how are we helping that child by not suspending them? My take on that, my change on that is, but that child is taking away learning time from 30 other kids.
Yes. Yes.
And if that child was going around picking pockets, you wouldn't hesitate to throw them out. But time is the one thing that we have that is most valuable. Mm-hmm. And when we have students wasting other students' time, what do we do about that?
Yeah.
And some of it has to do with teacher training. That's one of the reasons why when I worked for BITSA, Beginning Teacher Support and Assessment, as part of my national board's work, I would do lectures about how to maintain your class. And I had administrators come in and try and shut me down. I almost had a riot happen in one presentation I did because I happened to mention, I said, we get the bottom of the barrel at my school. And this administrator, oh, that you're denigrating the students. I said, look, if the academic decathlon students are the cream of the crop, the top, if there is a top, there is by definition a bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And I walked around the room. I said, I got the kid who attacked the police from your school. I got the kid who put the principal in the hospital from your school. I got the kid who threw a garbage can off a second-story balcony from your school. Mm-hmm. I got the kid, you know, and I went around the room. And the teachers all stood up and applauded me. And this one teacher was all set to start. I had to get in between him and the administrator. They were all set to go at it. I had teachers tell me I was ready to quit the profession. I heard you speak, and finally somebody's talking about reality,
mm-hmm.
the reality that I'm experiencing.
Yep, teacher from Planet Reality, huh?
Exactly.
And
the thing is, I understand that there's teachers that are teaching places where they don't have tests daily, and they don't have, but the bullying happens everywhere. That's one of the things Mary comments on. She says National Geographic should do a study, a program showing the canine nature of students at school.
Wow.
There's alphas, betas, and omegas, and outcasts.
Wow.
And everybody's there's this constant struggle for dominance. So even at the good school,
mm-hmm.
there are constant struggles for dominance.
Yep, you're absolutely right. Wow. A painful situation. Let's go back to your book for a moment and talk about the cover. I'm very interested in the cover.
Well, the cover represents a bench. We talked about, it talks in the book about when Mary meets David and Cosmo, the three main characters meet one another. They're sitting on a bench in the office. Now, in our office, the bench wasn't quite as graffitied as the one in the cover, book cover. Graffiti was a constant problem. I actually had run-ins with various gang members over graffiti in my classroom. I had one kid actually come up to me and said, Mr. D, that stuff you say about that gang, I ain't saying I'm in that gang, but the stuff you say could get you hurt. And I said, well, I tell you what, to me this looks like trash, and this is my living room 8 hours a day. I won't trash your living room if you don't trash mine. And I won't say bad things about people because I won't have to because my room's not being trashed. That ends as graffiti from his gang, but the cover represents a graffiti bench. And if students are left to their own designs, they will write with every kind of marker. And if you look very closely, in the lower right-hand corner, there's the numbers 1, 8, and 7.
Mm-hmm.
And that refers to 187, which is the code for murder.
Mm-hmm.
Supposed to represent the bench in the office mm-hmm. of the fictional school,
right.
Not my real school, but
right.
of the fictional school.
Right.
And because I've worked places where you couldn't find a square inch of the room that wasn't graffiti.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one part where it actually talks about this teacher who was not cutting it and gets fired, Mrs. Jode from Grapes of Wrath, homeless. They talk about she passed out in class. And the students took her desk apart and graffitied the inside of the desk.
Oh, my gosh.
And I've seen desks that were graffiti on the inside. I've tried to fight the graffiti wars valiantly. And a lot of it has to do with being recognized. If people are feeling recognized, they don't need to graffiti. I had students that tell me, hey, Mr. D, we'll throw you up and we'll graffiti a bus. You'll see yourself all across. And I said, don't do that. I want people to pay big money to put my name on the side of a bus. I don't want it to be a criminal act. Really, I tried to emphasize that if you feel this intense need to graffiti, that means you think you're invisible.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, many of them do think they're invisible.
Yeah. Just from your speaking, though, I go back to what I said before. You have a way. I mean, you obviously have a way, maybe it's from your experience or just who you are. You just apparently have a way of speaking to them, I guess, that you reach them and that you hear them and they seem like they feel safe with you.
Well, if you read all my blogs, you notice that there's a section on bullying, and I wrote that I was bullied in elementary school.
Mm-hmm.
But my story is a little different because I was born with a birth defect and I was bullied for it. And I was big in elementary school. And so, I mean, I'm only 5'8", but when you're 5'8" in seventh grade, that's big.
Yes.
After an operation, I couldn't get hit in the face. And so I would have to sit out during football season and basketball season. Everybody was all about, well, why is he getting to sit out? And he can't get hit. Oh, he can't get hit.
Uh-huh.
You know, but the thing is, I also was a smart ass from day one, Most of the violence, I talked my way out of it. But there's one post called The Tale of Two Beatings, where I got beat up twice. They're both different. One, I was in a fight with a friend, and I just let him beat me. The other one, I was attacked on the street. And the idea being, you got to know when to stand your ground and when to run.
Right.
And I had a talent for that. Mm. And my attitude was always, I was born this way. What's your excuse? David also says in the climactic fight scene, in which, by the way, no blows are thrown. There are people that get beat up in the book, but in the climactic confrontation between David and Angel, no blows are thrown. It's a war of words through a fence. When Angel says, you better stop what you're doing, and David says, why should I listen to you? And he says, you better listen to me. And he says, why should I think you better listen to me. And David says, why should I care what you think? And that was always one of my things with bullies, is one of the ways of disarming them is to say, why should I care what you think? Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to kick your ass. Well, then, bring it on.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the ways of ending it. And on the blog, I also repeatedly say, what worked for me may not work for you.
Sure. But at least you come from a place of experience, and I think that makes a difference. So what is next for you as a writer?
Well, I'm going to continue with the blog and continue to try and get it out there. And to the extent I wind up getting interest from teachers, I'm going to publish a companion volume to What Happened to David, where I go through all those literary references. So parents and teachers can read through it, or kids who are curious can read through it and get the additional stuff. And I'm also working on a novel now where the teacher gets bullied. I'm reprising Mr. Destry and Miss Curtis in a more adult version, in which there's some very serious crimes occurring, and Mr. Destry gets accused of being a serial killer and being having an improper relationship with a student, both of which are not true.
Mm-hmm.
But he has the crux of the book is what happens to him and how he gets out of it.
So there's more to come from you, my friend.
There sure is.
Is there anything we missed then? I know there's a lot we can talk about. I wish we could. But is there anything that we missed for today that you would like to talk about?
Just, I'd like to reemphasize that the book is a standalone, and the blog is a standalone, but they both work well together.
Mm-hmm.
And they're both considered resources. And if anyone wants to get a hold of me, they can get a hold of me through the website or through the book. And I'd be happy to work with teachers. I would be happy to donate my time, depending on how much time is asked for.
Right.
And how much traveling is involved.
All right. Well, they can learn from the best here, and the website is teacherfromplanetreality.com. Wow, I have so enjoyed this. I was really looking forward to having this conversation with you. And since you have such words of wisdom, is there anything you would like to leave us with today?
Listen to your children. Don't give up on tomorrow. It might bring something wonderful. And when bad things happen, the chance to practice our faith, whether it's faith in God or simply faith that tomorrow is another day.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Patrick DiBuono. The website is teacherfromplanetreality.com. The book is titled What Happened to David, and I suggest everyone head over to there. You will not be disappointed. There's a lot to think about and learn from. Thank you so much, Patrick. This has just been exciting for me.
You're welcome, Pat. It's been wonderful for me as well. I've really enjoyed talking with you.